Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 218. Myself and my guest today, Francois, Coach Q Bedell. We are rubbing basketball sleep out of our eyes. We are up late watching the women's Final Four. We are getting ready for another 4 hours of entertaining basketball today with the men's Final Four. So we're going to talk some more hoop here this morning on a Saturday. Really excited to have Francois. Coach Q, I'm going to call him Coach Q the rest of the time because he said that's the way everybody else, or that's what everybody else refers to him as. Bedell, the head women's basketball coach at Odessa Junior College in Texas. Really excited to have Coach Q on the pod. But before we get going with Coach, we of course want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, have them go see Cosac Chiropractic. I'm going to tell you right now, I've been a little sore lately. Went in and saw Dr. Kevin Wednesday and Thursday. I'm feeling so much better already. I know I'm seasoned and experienced. I know I've got a little more creaks and cracks than some people do, but if you're feeling that way, if you're in the Omaha area, go see Dr. Kevin, go see Dr. Heidi at Cosac Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, Spotify, iTunes, whatever it may be, download, rate, review, subscribe, say really, really nice things, give us a great review, so that when folks look up Coaching Basketball Podcast, they find a pen and a napkin, and it just helps out. So questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me at penandanapkin@gmail.com, and of course, go check out a penandanapkin.com. It's a really good coaching website because I'm biased. I'm the one that put it together. So go check it out. So enough of that garbage. Coach Q, how are we doing this fine Saturday morning?
Oh, man, honored to be here. And I sure appreciate you reaching out.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited here. I'm excited. We try to hit a lot of different segments of the coaching community, high school, college, junior college, small college, big college, that type of thing. So I'm always excited to kind of expand our universe here a little bit. And you know, obviously you've done some terrific things, Coach. So let's just get started there. Let's just go with that. Coach Q, tell us a little bit about your basketball journey, the stops you've had along the way, and tell us how you ended up at Odessa Junior College there in Texas.
Yes, sir. I'll try to make this real brief. My journey started in grad school at Hardin-Simmons on the men's side, and got to see a lot of good basketball on the men and women's side. But at the time, Julie Goodenough was at Hardin-Simmons, and she was rocking and rolling at Division III women's basketball, and it just really piqued my interest. Graduated from Hardin-Simmons, moved on back to the University of the Ozarks, where I played. I was a student activities director, resident director, and I was helping the men's basketball. And I just really enjoyed training the women, and it just felt like my niche. Fast forward, I leave a $60,000 job, and my mom and dad were going to kill me at the time, to move back home and volunteer at Northside High School under Ricky Smith in Fort Smith, Arkansas. At that time, they had just came off of another state championship. We walked ranked fourth in the country. Had a two McDonald Americans on that team, and we were loaded again. And so he was like, "Hey, come help me. I'll get you to college some way or another with the talent that we had." Did that for 2 years at Northside High School, and really got to move on with the talent with one of our kids to Southeast Missouri State, where I worked on a BJ Smith at SEMO, and enjoyed that. Learned a lot about the game, recruiting. BJ had just got to SEMO from junior college at NEO, played in two national championship games, was the runner-up, got the job at SEMO, was able to be there for 4 years, had four great years of experience there, NCAA tournaments, OVC conference championships. And then I took my talents over to Southeast Illinois and worked for Greg Franklin at Southeast Illinois for a year as an assistant, 1 year as the AD and head coach. and we had a great year there. Went to the national tournament in Salina both years. I think our total record in those 2 years was 66-7. And then that propelled me with an opportunity to go to Mississippi State with three young ladies that came with me from southeastern Illinois. Worked for Sharon Fanning, worked with Sharon Fanning for 4 years at Mississippi State. Got to experience, you know, three WNBA draft picks, a Sweet 16.
Wow.
Two NCAA tournament appearances, and then she retired. And then Marlene called me at VCU. Marlene Stallings called me at VCU. I was at VCU for 1 year, helped them recruit one of the best recruiting classes. And then got my opportunity, my first opportunity to be a head coach at junior college, at Tallahassee Community College. Well, my second opportunity, I should say. My first was at Southeastern Illinois, but my second opportunity to be a head coach at junior college at Tallahassee Community College. Got there, their 6 years kind of doormat program. You know, I think I got the job due to some really good mentors and Dan Olson, Kimberly Powell, Kevin Powell. They helped me get in the door there. But once I had the interview, I just told the AD, I said, hey, you give me 5 years, we'll hang a banner in this gym. And in year five, we hung a banner. We hung a championship banner in 2018. 2019, we had probably one of the best teams that I've had. But due to a rule that we didn't know about, that team didn't make the region tournament. We used to get an at-large berth. We were 25-5. We were ranked third in the country. And did not get to defend our national championship. That year, I moved on to Missouri State as the associate head coach. It was their year. COVID hit. We separated ways. And Odessa calls me, and I was really, coach, I was really, truly getting out of the business. I started my doctorate degree, moving into more of the teaching, speaking. I was consulting, mentoring coaches, kind of the leadership part of it that I was walking into. And Odessa calls, and, you know, I go on the interview and I walk on campus and I'm like, wow, Texas is bigger. Everything is in Texas bigger. And, you know, their investment in the program, their love for women's basketball, their commitment, it was so different from what I saw at Southeastern Illinois and Tallahassee. You know, the pay, what they thought of me, you know, and I tell people all the time, you know, your pay kind of reflects what they think of you. And, you know, and what they paid me and what they thought of me. And I was like, yeah, I called my wife. I said, we're moving to Odessa. And she's like, okay. And so that's how I get here at Odessa. And that's been my journey. And it's been a heck of a ride so far, man, to be honest with you.
Well, you have had a heck of a journey. And I had Matt Hackenberg on the pod last week. And one of my first questions for him was, when do you sleep? Because he's just a machine. And I might ask the same question of you, Q. You're doing all these things. You're moving around. You're coaching. You're doing a great job. And I think one of the fascinating things about you is you are a multi-time author. You have taken the time to write four books. Where's the inspiration for, you know, where does the passion for writing come from, I guess?
I'll be honest with you. The passion for writing came from that. I'm probably not supposed to. I have dyslexia. I was in special education. You know, so it's one of those where, just like I tell our players, you know, I want them to be more than just athletes. I want people to look at me as more than just a kid that was in special ed or a kid that just only plays sports. And so, I try to truly, truly, you know, take my weaknesses and use them as strengths and build skill sets out of them. And so I guess that, long story short, I think that's where the drive comes. I enjoy telling the story, and you know, let's be real, when you write a book or you write something or you do something as amazing as what you're doing with your podcast, I think I heard you said 227 interviews. Like, you're leaving something for the world to have. You're leaving a gift. You're leaving knowledge. You're leaving something behind that, you know, even your kids and your grandkids can remember and share with the world of you. And so I think writing does that. Like, you get to leave behind something, and you get to leave your story, and you get to narrate what you want people to hear and know about you, instead of somebody else telling that. You can leave that in writing. And so it's leaving something, leaving a piece of you. Even when you're gone, it's still, that piece of you is still here that people can enjoy, learn from, appreciate, and have. And so I think that's the inspiration behind it. You know, we truly talk about building the game, building people, leaving a legacy, and that's part of the legacy that I want to leave. And you know, some do it in different ways, and I wanted to do it in writing and you know, and knowledge mm-hmm. that I share.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go through all four books here real quick. Let's start with Coaching from the Heart. What's that one about? Just kind of give us a 90-second-ish synopsis of each one of these. So let's start with Coaching from the Heart.
Coaching from the Heart was facilitated by me. It's co-authored. And so okay. I went and recruited several coaches from high school, AAU, Division One, and I told them, I said, hey, share your best story. And the inspiration came from the NCAA Final Four. When you go to the Final Four, you're out, you're enjoying people, and you hear all these great stories. Sad, inspiring, just a plethora of stories. And my idea was Chicken Soup for the Soul. It used to be a great book that I loved.
Yep.
I'm like, I'm going to do a Chicken Soup for the Soul of coaching stories, because there's so many great coaching stories. So I recruited these people. We invested in them together, and they have a right to sell the book. And so it's basically for the soul. You're going to hear some amazing stories from each of these coaches. They all got two chapters, and we put this together and created Coaching from the Heart, Untold Stories.
Awesome. Awesome. Get Off the Bench and Into the Game.
That was actually my first book that I wrote.
Okay.
It took me 10 years to write that book. And that book is basically a book that is life hacks, stories, inspirational stories, just really, truly trying to motivate people to really, truly get off the bench and get into the game of life. Take risks, be vulnerable. Don't be scared to have people critique you and share your story, share your authentic you. And so that book kind of encompasses a wide range of things over years that I've been living.
Mm-hmm. The Footprint of Success.
So that is another co-author. I was invited to co-author a book with several people from around the world, multimillionaires, preachers, producers for mainstays like Tyler Perry. And so we all came together, and my publisher and mentor and really best good friend, he's the publishing company. Shout out to Darren Palmer and self-published in 30 days. He invited me to be a part of this co-authoring book where I talked about leadership, and it's a footprint of leaders from across the world that share a chapter in that book. So I'm a co-author, and also I have a right to sell that book. And so I use teaching points when I use that book and I speak. I use teaching points from each of those authors. And so that's Footprints of Success.
Mm-hmm. And then probably the one, you're getting nerdy in the basketball world here, from Chumps to Champs, and basically talking about your Tallahassee JUCO journey, it sounds like.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's probably the dish to my heart as far as the basketball side. It is the, I do talk about the 5-year journey of how we built that program, and it goes into really, truly how we from day one all the way to the last day that we built not only our players, but how we built the program, how we did, you know, year to year of truly trying to build a championship program, how I try to build our players and the CEOs, and I try to get them to think about this as a business. And it's their business, and they're entrepreneurs, and what you put in the business is what you get out of the business. From how we built our storage unit to for small colleges, of how I took the concept of hoarding and I made it save our budget, you know, almost 110% at Tallahassee. So it just really breaks down the journey and how we built a program and how I take that blueprint, and I take that blueprint everywhere we go.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, get signed up today for the 4th annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic will take place on Saturday, April 27th at the AEF Basketball Academy facility located at South 99th Circle and Portal Road in La Vista, Nebraska. We've got a great lineup of speakers, starting out with three on-court demonstrations. Justin Carter, former Creighton basketball player and owner and operator and founder of ProVision Basketball here in Omaha. He's going to do some essential skills and drills for player development. Dave Hubert, the head girls basketball coach at Ashland Greenwood High School, is going to do defensive principles and drills. Mark Sfigera, the head men's basketball coach at my alma mater, the Harvard of the Heartland, Briarcliff University. Great offensive mind, and he's going to talk about offensive basketball. One of the great things that we do at a Pen and a Napkin Clinic is we have our classroom sessions during our lunches. We've got three great speakers to come in this year to talk during our lunches. Jim Simons, the head boys basketball coach at Omaha Westside, is going to talk about using the three-point shot. Andy Gerlez, my good friend G, going to talk about building a program foundation and practice principles from Papillion La Vista South. And Tyler Bird, the Think Shrink, you heard him on the podcast a few weeks ago. He's going to talk about mental health for coaching and keeping balance in your coaching life. And then we're going to have two breakout sessions. That's probably the thing that makes a Pen and a Napkin Clinic the most unique thing, is you're going to sit around and you're going to talk with random coaches about random topics and pick the brains of random coaches that are going to be there for the clinic. Along with that, once the clinic is done, perhaps the best part of the clinic, I don't know, there's a lot of good things about the clinic, is our post-clinic social, and that's going to be at Wine 121, located at 120th and Center here in Omaha. Just $15 per coach if you want to attend that. Again, it's all about the coaches, and I try to keep it really, really affordable. This year, for one coach, for over 7 hours worth of stuff, $50. That's about $7 an hour to get great information. Two coaches from a staff, $90 or $45 a piece. Three coaches from the same staff, $120, so $40 a piece. If you have four or more coaches from your staff, that's $35. That's $5 an hour that you're going to pay for your whole staff to have a great day of knowledge and learning things. So if you're interested in signing up for the clinic, look for our flyer on Twitter, or you can email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. You can DM me on Twitter. Registrations are due Thursday, April 25th. Have to do that for the lunch count and make sure that we're taken care of there. But coaches, you will not regret signing up for the 4th annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. Do that today. Well, you've had a tremendously successful blueprint, Coach. You've obviously, you have found success in pretty much every step along the way here. And let's get into it here. Obviously any coach is successful because of great players. If you're going to be great, you got to have great players. One of the fascinating things about, and we talked about a little bit about this before we started recording here, is recruiting at the junior college level, because you know that you are the swinging door. You're bringing them in, and you're working hard to bring good players into your program, but you're also looking to swing the door the other way and find a place that they're going to be successful in going out of the door here. So what's kind of your recruiting process, and what have you done at the JUCO level there to be successful, and how have you managed to make that work at such a high level to bring in high level kids, but then also what's the process of finding them a home after they're done playing for you?
Yes, sir. That's a great question. I think it starts with as a coach, you truly knowing what it takes for a kid to fit in your program, your system. I think some people struggle because they're probably are hitting this and they change every year. And for us, I know I can see a kid and I can, you know, athletically know that, that's a fit. For me, it's, you know, we want, if you're going to be a small guard, you got to be dynamic, you know, whether defensively, offensively. We're looking for long athletic wings. We're looking for post players that are, you know, very aggressive and long and can run the floor. And, you know, I've tried to get really big posts, that big bodies and stuff. And I try to have one, but they don't really, they're not really successful if they can't move for us. So for me, that's where I start. My non-negotiables, like, you got to be able to be athletic. You got to be able to run, catch, and you got to be able to want to get in shape, because to play our style, you got to be in shape. So those are the kind of four negotiables. Everything else, I feel like, as a coach, you're a teacher. You should be able to teach, you know. I'm not looking for kids that are already developed. That's not, you know, it's not what we do. And so if I can find those kids that are athletes, some may be, you know, volleyball, dual sports, volleyball and track, you know, they can jump, you know, they're athletic. You know, and now I might have to train and develop some of the other things. And so when you get those kids and you're able to get them in your system, we're big on skill development. We're big on, you know, pulling out weaknesses and trying to address shortcomings. And then, you know, we just try to coach the pee out of them and just on a daily basis, getting them to get better, you know, in the skill development and the teaching piece. And then moving them to the next level, I believe, and I tell kids all the time, if you play hard and you guard and you can just finish a layup, you know, I think at the next level, the way we play and who we play and the way we coach them and prepare them, college coaches come because they're like, you know, Q, if nothing else, if it's not a starter, but we know it's a kid that can give us minutes, it's like a kid that's going to buy in because they've been taught the right way. They've been coached the right way. You prepared them. They're good people. They're good leaders. Those are kids that we want a part of our culture. And I'm big on culture. Like, I want culture kids. I want my kids to walk into another culture and be a culture changer. To whatever that culture is, they're adding to the culture. You're not taking away, but you're adding. And so being in it long enough where I think Division I coaches who have taken my kids or who have recruited my kids, they all understand that, you know. And I guess the biggest compliment I've gotten was at Missouri State, and I had two kids that are in our league that left me and came into the league and were at Indiana State and Illinois State. And when those two coaches could tell you, man, your kids get it, your kids were culture changers, your kids understand what it takes to survive, where other junior college kids that they recruited were struggling, where our kids were excelling, I think we're on the right track. And it is really, truly just trying to build that young lady or that young man up to be a good person, a good teammate, a good student, a good leader. And then I think the good basketball stuff comes with all of those things.
You know, interesting. Or let's go this. I got a bunch of new questions here in my head as you went through all that stuff. So sorry, Q. You know what? As you're going through it, do you have kind of in mind probably by the end of their freshman year? Hey, I think Becky's going to be. I think this school, and this school would probably be really good fits for her. And do you kind of push them in that direction, or do you kind of say, hey, what are you looking for in a school? Or is it different with every kid? Maybe it is. I don't know. Help me out here, Q. You know, how does that process go in that regard when you're communicating with your own player about their next step along the way?
That is a great question. Great question, because we're dealing with that stuff now. So I have – my philosophy has changed over the years. I used to try to truly, truly help them. I don't do that anymore. One, because of the transfer portal, and then two, some of the experiences that young ladies have had. And so what I do now is I wait. I give their information out now so that they can interact, develop relationships with the different coaches. Here's what we are really blessed with is when we go to Dave Neely's event in Dallas, there's all these coaches. They start reaching out, and whoever calls our young ladies, I'm like, here's the number. Here's the information. Start developing a relationship. Call them. And I tell our young ladies, when you get overwhelmed with recruiting, come talk to me. I'll help you through it. But I need you to get to know those people. Now, when we get to the stage of that, you're trying to make a decision. Their decision is their decision. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm there to answer the questions. Like, what do you think, coach? Well, I'll tell them, have you looked at their style? Have you looked at their bench? Have you looked at the coaching personality? Right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to look at the gamut of things, and you've got to decide, you know, what from what you've heard and what you've talked about through the process of the year with talking to these people. My biggest question is to them, do you think if you go there, you're going to get better as a person, you're going to get better as a student, you're going to get better as a basketball player? If you can't answer that, then that might not be the school for you.
Oh, great point. Yeah, love it. I had a question. I wrote this out. This is, I'll even read this to you here, Q. All right.
Yep.
What is the most difficult part of coaching in a 2-year program? But then right after that, I put, not that most people aren't in a 2-year program anymore anyway, with the transfer portal and everything like that. It just seems like, and I get it. I don't necessarily blame the players if it's an option. I think it should be explored. I think that if coaches can leave, you know, if Eric Musselman, as an example, can leave Arkansas and go to USC within 24 hours, yep. why can't a player look to do that? But at the best, they're going to be at your place. You know, let's say they take a redshirt year, they're going to be at your place. The longest is 3 years, but most of your kids are going to be 1 or 2 yep. year kids. What are some of the obstacles that you run into?
I tell people all the time this: if an AD was out there, was smart enough, they would recruit a really good junior college coach to come be in their program now with the transfer portal. Because what Division I schools are going through is nothing.
Yeah.
Like it's what we do every year. To me, I'll be honest with you, I don't think any of it's an obstacle.
Okay.
No, it's I look at it like this. If you're having a bad year at junior college, your next year can be really good because you can help those kids go somewhere else, or it's not a fit because we're only on a 1-year contract. Like,
yep.
The school, I'm on a 1-year contract, so is the player. So it's really not an obstacle. You can flip over your team really good. Now, the what I try to do is I try to keep my freshmen. But they kind of dictate that by how hard they work, by if they're committed. And then some of them are get overwhelmed. Like, I was here, I thought this was more of a hobby than a job. And, you know, if you're at the right junior colleges or the right Division III or the right Division II school, NAIA school, you know, and you're playing for a winner, like, it's a division, you're in a Division I program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so... I don't really think there's an obstacle. I would say the biggest thing for me here in my first couple of years at Odessa, I was losing my best players after 1 year because they were really good. And so I just couldn't get a culture set in my first 2 years. And then my second year, my best players came back as freshmen. They came back. And so now you have a 30-5 year.
Yep.
I think if there's an obstacle, that would be the obstacle that, you know, you lose your best freshman. But at the same time, I encourage them to go. Like, if you go get 3 years,
yep,
and you got offers that you want, you know, you better go. I don't encourage them to stay. And most people might get upset with me on, you know, for that. But at the same time, like, I encourage them to go and get the 3 years because this is what you came here for.
Mm-hmm.
This is not about me. It's about you. And I think that's why we've had success because, you know, it's not about me. It's truly about them. You know, and when we're good, you know, the coach gets a lot of credit, but at the end of the day, I think we're good because I made it all about them. Mm-hmm. And they repaid me by, you know, performing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it all sits. But to go back to your question, I think the only obstacle would be if you lose your best freshman. But at the end of the day, I don't really see it as an obstacle.
Yep. Let's talk a little bit about your doctoral dissertation here. Fill folks in about what you're working on here. And then I think especially at this time period, obviously very, very relevant with what's going on in the world of college basketball. So I'm gonna have a little anticipation here, Q, and I'll let you introduce and talk about what you're writing about for your doctoral dissertation.
Yes, sir. It is athlete satisfaction and the influence of transformational leadership on the transfer portal. And so what I'm looking at is, does transformational leadership influence player satisfaction entering the transfer portal? And right now, we're gathering the information from literature, looking at, you know, employee satisfaction, things like that. And so I'm in the beginning. I just finished chapter one. I'm doing my lit review. And, you know, looking forward to getting into the process of, you know, have my survey questions, sending those out to college students and kind of seeing what that information brings back. But, you know, if we're looking at, if I'm standing on the shoulders of giants and I'm taking that information of the shoulders of giants of the people that came before me, looking at this topic from employee satisfaction, you know, research shows that, you know, in those areas and work places that transformational leadership does influence employee satisfaction, and you have more, you reduce the turnover, you know, you reduce turnover in these cultures. And so I'm curious to see what it looks like when we get done. And my ultimate goal is also, I was doing it from a leadership perspective when I was at Liberty. And so I have a specialist in strategic leadership, where basically everything but the dissertation. So I transferred and I've come to another college, California Intercontinental University. And I tell anybody, if they're going to work on a master's or a doctorate, I'm getting a DBA, so I've switched over to business. That college, I give a pub. That college is amazing. And so the bottom line at these universities, losing players, I really think universities and institutions are going to have to start looking at the bottom line, the money part of what they're losing with the transfer portal, because it's just not losing a player. There's so many other things that you're losing. And if I'm an AD or president, you're going to have to, I know these entities are looking at the dollar, mm-hmm. the amount with NLI and all these different things. And so I'm kind of stepping into that, but a complete dissertation is a good dissertation. So I'm trying to get it complete, and then I will dive into all the other things as fun and leadership. My goal is to write another leadership book from this, from a different angle. And so that's kind of what I'm doing my dissertation on.
Awesome. You've been around, so you've obviously you've been through the interview process, the application and the interview process numerous times. It's interview season. Coaches are moving around. It all slides downhill. So talk to us, Coach, about just the keys to a great interview. What have you done? What do you believe you need to be doing within the interview process in order to really sell yourself and trying to acquire that position that you're there for?
Yes, sir. I would say the first thing is know your information about the school. Mm-hmm. You know, research your information about the school. So, you know, one of the big things that I learned and asking questions too, but I learned was that here at Odessa, as I'm doing research about Odessa to get ready for the interview, I keep seeing this thing called Aspen. And I was familiar with it at Tallahassee, but it was big here. Aspen. Well, started to do some digging, and the Aspen Award is really huge. It's the national championship for academia.
Okay.
And we've been in the running for it every year here at Odessa. And so, you know, I made a comment about the Aspen. Like, you know, I want to win an Aspen. I want to win another national championship just like you want to win an Aspen mm-hmm. award. And he looked at me and he goes, "What do you know about the Aspen Award?" And I go, "I know it's your national championship." And so that right there automatically puts you in a seat where they know you're invested. They know it's more than just basketball for you, that you can step out and, you know, I tell people, have a plan of how you're going to get into that community and truly, truly mean that. And for me, I'm big in trying to bring community together, because if you bring community together, that's fans mm-hmm. for your program, boosters. People get to learn and know you. So have a plan when you sit down. And for me, this last interview here at Odessa, the books were a great introduction. As I walked into the interview, I figured out and I did some research on who I felt like was going to be on my committee. And I had a book for each person. Whatever area I felt like they were in, whether it was student affairs, hey, in your student affairs, here's a book that I think, well, I can add value to your department, and here's how, and you can read about it. Athletics, here's a book. You know, and so I used my books as entryways, and that kind of blew over the committee. The biggest thing is be able to ask them questions just as much as they're asking you questions. And so long story short, I think those are some areas that I think as I'm on interview committees, I see a lot of people when they come and interview, they miss out on those areas of truly, truly separating yourself from everyone else.
Mm-hmm. This is from one of our loyal listeners here, Josh Stu. Josh, I'm sorry, I goofed up your name and you told me how. Stuhite. He wanted to the next time we had a male coach of a women's team, he was curious about the importance of female assistants when you are a male head coach of a women's basketball team. So, Coach, I know at Odessa there you've got a couple of young ladies that helped you out this year. Just how important is it to have that balance on your coaching staff?
I think it's important, and I've had them both. I've had all male staffs with all the female team, and we were highly successful. And I've had females, so I truly don't think there's a difference, especially if everyone's heart is in the right place. But I'll tell you the difference between my staff right now is I have two female coaches that played for me mm-hmm. 10 years ago. They were former athletes. And I think what separates them, not just being females, but what makes them special is that they play for me. And so when they walk into that locker room, you know, they can help these young ladies understand the process, the journey, my approach, my expectation, my demand. And I think that's what makes them really valuable. Not only that they're females, but they are females that are in the sisterhood of the 10 years that I've been a head coach and all the young ladies that have played for me. That's what makes them special, because we do have a true sisterhood of players that have all the way back from Southeastern Illinois still communicate with my players that play for me today. They call and they talk to them and they tell them, hey, buy in. We're watching. We're supporting. If you need anything, we have your back. If you're looking for a job, and I call them, I go, hey, is there a job, or is there an internship, or is there anything? I go to my immediate player circle, and we call it the sisterhood. They I think that's what they bring. But as far as male and female, I think you have to have a balance, because mm-hmm. I really believe you have male on staff. Females respond different to males. And when you look at the science part of it, you know, you look at the father figure, the brother figure, the uncle figure, they respond different. They want to please. And then on the female side, there's that dynamic of mother relationship sometimes. That dynamic sometimes is, you know, combative, mm-hmm. you know. And so I think you have to have the mixture. I think you have to have both. And sometimes you have to have a male assistant, because the head coach can't be that, because he's the head coach mm-hmm. when he's the male of a female team. And so I think sometimes you can offset that, where you have a male and a female, and are, you know, and I just think it's a mixture, and it kind of depends on what kind of head coach you are. You know, for me, I'm a very open door. I build relationships, so I might not need another male. I can have my females, but then when I was all male staff, you know, what we did have is we had female mentors that were a part of the program that traveled with us. There are, one of them's our sports site. So we did have females involved. So it just kind of is a balance. I think you can just kind of, depending on what your philosophies are and what your program is built and the culture you build, I think depends on what you have, because, you know, I think sometimes you can have either one. And if they don't fit your culture, it doesn't matter if it's male or female, it's not going to work, you know, because they don't fit the culture that you're trying to bring. And the kids haven't bought into it. Yeah. So I really believe it's based off of what you do as the head coach, what you're trying to build, and what that culture looks like, if that answers the question.
Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs. And now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details. Coach, at this time, we are going to jump into our John Wooden quote of the day. Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, one of the best books that any coach could ever have. So, Coach Q, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day?
Yes, sir.
All right. From page 122 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, the John Wooden quote of the day is, "Knowledge alone is not enough to get the desired results. You must have the more elusive ability to teach and to motivate. This defines a leader. If you can't teach it and you can't motivate, you can't lead." What do you got for me, Coach?
I would agree. It's and it sums up is this. My grandmother used to always say, and I've heard it said a lot too. If the student hasn't learned, the teacher hasn't taught.
Yep.
And I truly agree with that, being, because I see myself as an educator. We call it basketball, but the basketball, I tell them when they walk into the gym, that's my classroom. And my job is to teach, motivate, and develop you into the best version of yourself, not just as a basketball player. We just use basketball as a tool. And I'm a big John Wooden fan. I have that book. And he's right. If you can't, and I said it earlier, our jobs as coaches, to take a person that knows little and motivate them to want to work on their craft, learn their craft, but also teach them. Like, our job is to teach them. And a lot of coaches want already made players. My job is to take a player that is raw and I'm going to teach you the skills to help you grow. I do have knowledge, but if I can't motivate you, and when I say motivate you, if I can't enhance you, and I go back to PGC, I work at PGC and shape you, then I'm not a very good coach. I'm not a very good coach.
Yeah. No, I think that's the way, you know, most of the folks that will listen to this will be high school coaches, but we've got, you know, college coaches, professional coaches, I mean, we got people from all over the world that listen to this. So I agree with you there that most of us are not, you know, I always find it interesting, Coach. I don't know how you feel, but you watch social media, you see stuff, and you know, must add actions or look at this. It's like, whoa, that's a great play. But I don't have one, let alone five players that are smart enough or capable enough to of doing that or making that read or doing this or doing that. You know, and I think that we have to come into that gym or that classroom every day. And I love the way that you say that. And I've always, you know, when I was coaching, I kind of thought of it the same way. This is my classroom. I'm here to teach. We're here to get a little bit better here today. And that should be our overall number one goal. And I think that's a huge part of what our job should be. That's what we should be doing every single day.
Yes, sir. Yep. Yes, sir. Yep. Exactly.
All right. Hey, let's get into Coach, let's get into your philosophy here. Let's talk a little bit about sideline out of bounds plays. You gave me the opportunity to kind of pick some things, so I'm gonna pick away here. And we haven't talked about sideline out of bounds plays here in a while. So tell us about your philosophy, how you integrate them. How many options do you have? Shameless plug, I wrote an article, my first Substack article on just implementation of certain things and you know, how many is too many is essentially was the theme of the article. What do you do for sideline out of bounds plays? How many do you have? How do you implement it? What are you looking for as you're scouting, whether it's offense or defense, when you're looking at other teams? So I'm going to kind of let you roll here, Coach. And if I've got a question, I'll try to politely interrupt you. But now it's your time to cook here, Coach Q. So tell us a little bit about your sideline out of bounds play philosophy.
Yes, sir. And when you picked that, I started laughing because I think God has a funny way of making us be tested of our weaknesses. I think this year we were God awful. My team was God awful with side out of bounds, underbounds, with our, you know, underneath plays. Like, but my philosophy is, I really want to score between out of bounds under and out of bounds side. If we can average about 6 points out of those, and I call those special teams. Those are like your special play. Like this is the special team stuff when we talk about, you know, basketball. And so for us, you know, when I implement out of bounds, I'm looking. My first thing is there's option one. And there's option two and there's option three. So we want to at least have at least three options. And then the last option is get it in. Mm-hmm. You know, my other thing is I want it to flow. Like I want it to kind of flow right into, if we don't have, and all of them going to be quick. We don't have option one, option two is happening right next. Option three, whether it's get it in or it's another option to score. You know, we want it to flow, and I want it to flow right into our offense. So when we get it in, we're going right into something that we run or an isolation for one of our best players or post players or guard. And so for me, we practice how we implement those every day is when we scrimmage, we do it like a game. I have 3 to 5 minute games that we run. And we play, we coach out of those 3 to 5 minute games. And if the ball goes out of bounds on the side or underneath, we go right into running play. So with this group this year, and I think every group is different. And if you try to force your will and give them stuff that they don't can't do or don't like, I think you're not going to have success. So we weren't very out of bounds. We, for some reason, we were weak in those areas. So I limited it to the same out of bounds play, and we look for the same option.
Okay.
And to make it really simple, so we're not overthinking. And I feel like we had kind of the yeeps in out of bounds situations this year. So out of bounds under, I made it, we went in a T formation, and there's several options out of a T formation, and we ran that every single time. And the last option was just to get it in and us get into an offense. Out of bounds side, we did a box set. We either looked for the corner for a shot, the post up, or a back screen to get it in, and or we pass it, and we go right into a stagger. They go off into a ball screen, and we kind of just float into it that way. And it gave us, as I changed that in the middle of the year, we float better in our out of bounds under and sideline out of bounds. And so this year, I'm going to be more cognitive earlier, getting that stuff in earlier to see how we respond. And every team is different. So this year's team, man, we just kind of kept it really simple. And we look for those three options. If those three options weren't in, we get it in, and then we get into our set. Next year, I want to be a little bit more dynamic in that area. And I have to do a better job of training and manipulating that for our kids. But this year we weren't very good at it.
Do you think that your struggles had to do with the schematic, or you maybe just didn't put enough time into it, or did the philosophy wasn't clicking? What was maybe, you know, because I'm sure there's coaches that are thinking the same thing. Man, we, you know, every coach goes to the opposite. Well, we got to do this better, you know, and you've obviously mm-hmm. identified this as one of the things you need to do better. As you look at it, you know, there's got to be like the why. Why did we struggle with sideline and baseline out of bounds plays, the special teams type of stuff? So what have you kind of narrowed it down to this early in your offseason?
So I really think the why for us was, it's on me. I don't think we spent enough time on it earlier. Uh-huh. I had a really smart point guard, and we had some really good post players. I just assumed that we would get it. And uh-huh. and you know, sometimes you know what an assumption makes you look like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so I think it was more me. I just didn't – we didn't spend enough time on it early. And so, and usually, soon as we get to school, like I usually start with out of bounds under, sideline. I kind of give them, that feel. And I was like, oh, I think we got return. We'll be good. And it's more of me that we didn't spend enough time on it.
Mm-hmm.
Early. Yes, sir.
Gotcha. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Let's talk a little player development here, Coach. Let's talk a little bit about what you're doing. Like you said, you have a two-pronged mission. You're bringing kids in, but then you're developing them not only for your program and the good of your program, but also to hopefully get them on to the next level. And again, a lot of the coaches that listen to this are at the high school level. So, you know, we're trying to help our players who are interested in getting on to the next level, which is playing for somebody like you or whomever it may be. So, you know, what are you emphasizing with your player development program? What are some of the things that you like to do? Again, this is a big open topic here, Coach. So maybe I'm guessing you probably do some different things with your post players than you do your guards. There's probably some things that are in common. So like I said, Coach, just go ahead and cook here a little bit, and I'll try to politely interrupt if I feel the need to do so. So
yes, sir. So this is my favorite area. This is the area the most, and so how we set ours up. And I think this year we tested a bunch of different things over the years, but I think this year we kind of found the magic sauce with this group. And again, like I said, every group is different, but I think player development is two areas. We have the weight room and we have the court. And so what we decided to do was we divided our team up. We divide them up in groups. And so for us, there's no particular way we divide them up. We just divide them up, and some people got out of class earlier and some people got out of class later. Mm-hmm. You can divide it up in sophomore, senior, just kind of however. But I took, and we had a team of 16 kids. So we had 8 in the weight room and 8 in skill development. And we gave 45 minutes to the weight room of that group and the weight room for 8 minutes, 8 of those young ladies in the weight room for 45 minutes, and 45 minutes, the other 8 were with me in skill development. So, you know, Coach Maria could really, truly hone in and be locked in on those 8 in the weight room, making sure that they maximize every rep. And then we could maximize every rep on the court in our player development. So I think that might help somebody down the road, because you know, you focus on in player development, you focus on 16 kids or 15 kids. Now you can you know, make that ratio smaller and more people can get more attention. So I think that might help somebody. But when we get down on the court, we talk about player development on the court. The first thing we start with in every session with everybody is, you know, the feel of the ball. We're slapping the ball. I want you to be aggressive in attacking and getting to know the basketball. So that's my biggest thing, is getting to know the basketball. So we're slapping, moving the basketball. You know, somebody's look at us, and you might have seen the same thing with UConn when they were doing that on the sideline.
Yep, I saw that.
Of the media. We do that. We don't wear gloves, but we're smacking the ball, moving the basketball around our bodies. We do that for 5 minutes. The next segment we walk into is stationary ball handling. Now we're pounding the basketball. So you have your pound dribbles, your V dribbles in place, just really moving the basketball. And I stress, you manipulate the basketball. The basketball does not manipulate you. So you have to move the basketball rooted in the ground, moving the basketball. And we do that for like 7 to 8 minutes time. So each session, each rep is 30 seconds, and you're going as hard as possible. And you, if they go as hard as possible, like they're kind of sweating by the time we end this, because it is moving the basketball hard, doing different things, whether V dribble, between the legs, you know, scissors with the basketball, just all types of things, stationary, moving the basketball, becoming connected with that basketball. Then we move from stationary, we go right into ball handling on the move. Now, ball handling on the move switches. It can be various things where we can use cones. And I with the foundation, I start off with pound. Every dribble, every move has to have a pound dribble. So pound between legs, pound cross, pound pat. And so we break those down. And so when we get together, now we do, you do single move, you do double move, you do triple move. And really moving the basketball, game speed. Everything that we're doing is game speed, So we'll do cones, then we'll do ball handling on the move with a finish. So I call this shake the chair. So again, I'm very fundamental when it comes to, like, we're going to do the cross between legs behind the back. And if we add a fourth one, it will be in and out. So I stick with those kind of basic moves. Now, there's all the, you can do so many other moves, but I stick with those basic because those are the, like, those are the basic moves you're going to do in a game, because you're not going to put, you know, five moves together to get by somebody. It's mm-hmm. going to either be cross, between legs, or a pat, or, you know, in and out. Yep. So we're attacking. So now we're attacking with the finish. So the finishes are several finishes. It's a regular, we call reach. And I call it, I get this kind of from Dave Novak. I kind of simplify it. It's a reach. We have off 2 feet. We have stride finish. We have anchor leg. We call Steve Nash or Kobe. You know, you have an inside reach. You have same leg. And then those are kind of advanced as you get to see them going. So we get right into, and this is guard and post, because I feel like your posts have to be able to do these, handle the ball and make these moves just as well as a guard, because I'm not teaching you to be a position player. I'm teaching you to be a basketball player.
Yep.
And so now we go from finishes. Now we do the same stuff and we go. I know most people might cringe at me when I say this, but I'm old school. I believe in the mid-range game. You know, some people have gotten away from the mid-range game. I believe in the mid-range game. So we do all these same moves from a finished position at the rim. Now we're doing all these same moves, you know, between legs, behind the back, attack. And it's a one dribble, 1 pound dribble into your pull-up jumper. And we do jumper, pull-up jumper off the glass. We use the glass, and then we do it swish. And so if you don't go off the glass, it's 10 push-ups. If you don't swish it when you shoot, it's 10 push-ups. So it gets them to truly focus in on being in the shot, being in the moment. And then we get to it where we do the same deal, same movement, you know, and you go outside and then you attack inside. So we do the same moves to the outside of what we're doing, and then we do the same movement attacking inside using your weak hand, and then we flip sides of the floor, and you do the same thing, and we go outside jumper, inside jumper. So those are some things that I think are really, really important that encompasses all your players, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely.
Then in player development, then once we get through that, we go to passing. So a lot of kids can't pass. So we work on the fundamentals of passing, bounce. I know it sounds elementary, but bounce pass, chest pass, one-hand pass, overhead pass. Then we got 3 cones. So we start at the first cone, you do it. You go to the second cone, you do it, and it's a distance. You go to the third cone, that's our last cone, where now you're throwing a long, if they get good, you throw a long bounce pass and you learn how to put some spin on it, and you're trying to hit a target. We do that stationary, and then we also do it on the move where you're dribbling and you're trying to, you know, you see those amazing passes that people make, long bounce passes that hit and in transition. So we practice those. We practice throwing a long ball skip pass. Because in women's basketball, we take for granted some females can't make those passes. So you have to practice those passes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we practice passing. So when we get out of that, now we go in skill development. Now we have the, instead of me making passes, we're making our players make passes to the player that's got to finish. So those are both sides of the floor using your right and left hand. You know, and then when we get into, I skipped form shooting. We do form shooting before we, right after we do ball handling, we do form shooting with our right hand. We start with our left. We do, you know, make 10 with your left. And we, divide it where restricted lane, you've got, the side, middle, side. And so you shoot left-handed. 10 there on the side, 10 in the middle, 10 on the other side, and then we go right hand, 10, 10, 10. And so we always want to work the right hand. The first rep around that informed shooting is off the glass with your left hand, off the glass in the middle, off the glass from the opposite side, which is a little bit awkward from one angle. With the right hand, you do the same thing off the glass, off the glass from the side, off the glass in the middle, off the glass from the side. Just usually getting that hand, and then we form shooting. We take steps back. You shoot, you take a step back. You shoot, you take a step back. You miss, you take a step forward. So you get 10 shots, and you kind of see where you're at. That's how we start with shooting before we go into our shooting stuff, form shooting. But you know, it's really fundamental, like really, really, really fundamental. And then we divide. We go guard and post. And so we do footwork with the post players in the paint, and we do shooting with our guards, ripping, rip and go, get into a shot, you know, whether I rip high, rip low, one dribble, 1-2 in our shot. We do penetrate pitch for our guards, drive, penetrate pitch. They show, shoot. And so that kind of fits into our offense. And then I kind of flip it. I flip it, and I give 10 minutes where guards come and do post moves, post go down and do shooting moves, because I really believe guards should be able to understand what posts feel like, what it feels like to post up, because you might have some situations where you have a really small guard on your guard, and I had a big guard this year. I have big guards. And so we invert where we post our guards up, and so we teach our guards post moves. And then we let our post, you know, shoot the three to get used to shooting pick and pop, shoot the three. And then the last part of it is one-on-one, two-on-two. I let them play, because I think there's nothing like playing three-on-three. There's nothing like now putting all that stuff into it. And each day we have a different skill development session. So we focus on, like, Monday might be shooting and footwork. Tuesday might be finishing drill. But every day ends with one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how we build some of our player development. And, you know, it can get more in-depth, but that's kind of the, you know, meat of it right there.
No, absolutely love it, Coach. This is terrific stuff. My brain is going a mile a minute, you know, so not to quote Michael Scott there too much, but let's wrap up here, Coach Q. Let's talk a little bit about your game day prep. Kind of what of your emphasis? We get it's time to put all this stuff together. You know, what's kind of your MO? How do you get your team ready to go on game day? How do you handle, like, your pre-games and your halftimes and that type of stuff? You know, what are you looking to do there to get your team to play at the height of their ability?
So, and that's a good question. So game day, you got to pick out your fresh dress. You know, you got really good.
And I have seen I have seen those pictures. You look good, my friend. You look very, very good. So
yeah, I appreciate it. And I've gotten away from the tie and all that stuff since COVID. And I'm a sports jacket and a hoodie guy now. And it, you know, and everybody's like, you know, I look sporty, but also it's comfortable. But I don't think we should get away from the jacket. Everyone now. You know, I still commend Kentucky. They all dress up in their sports jackets, and I'm with them on that one. But, you know, the biggest thing is when we go in and shoot around, I try to bring as much energy, and it's game day. Like, we are blessed to be able to play the game and have an opportunity of we worked so hard, you know, all week to get to this moment. And so I really, truly, I got music blasting. I try to be really relaxed and, you know, and letting them know, like, you know, we prepared. If you prepared, then you should have confidence and you should be excited for the opportunity to show what you worked so hard for. And I want them to feel easy, relaxed. So music is playing. And we go through our finishing drill stuff. We go through shooting and shoot around. I try to, you know, really, truly, get them locked in and focus on what we're doing. I don't focus a lot on the other team. We look at and we talk about their tendencies all week. We know what they're going to do. We know who their best players are. And in our cases, sometimes too, we're not like Division One. Some schools don't have synergy and don't put up stuff. So we go into games really blind. Like you don't know what you're going to see or who players are. Cause then some rosters are completely new. They don't even have the whole same team that they had last year. So I don't really focus on them. I focus on, hey, here are our principals here. They're going to adjust to us. We're not adjusting to them. They're going to adjust to us. So I really focus on us, making sure that we're good. Going into the locker room, the locker room vibe is always set. We have certain lights that are on that, I'm very colorful guy. So all week, the locker room is red. Our lights are red. Our accent lights are red. And I tell them that is us preparing for war. It's red. That's the mentality. Blood. We're going to, and I know this sounds kind of violent, but I'm trying to get them in a mode that we're ready to go to war. We're ready to rock and roll. On game day, when they walk in, they know it's game day because the locker room is our color, blue. Okay. We're prepared. We're ready. It's time. And, I have the lights off. We have accent lights that, we walk in into a situation where the mood is set, and every game, every week, this mood is set. We're priming them. And I think we psychologically get them ready because when they walk into the locker room, they know what this means. It's time to go. On the board, our tendencies, what we're about to do on the board. And then right before we go out, I play a little, I do a little meditation with some, affirmations. You that we find you are great. You're ready. You're ready for war. You're prepared, and we meditate for about 30, 45 seconds. I turn that off and then I talk to them as their eyes are closed about who they are, who we are, what we're about to do. See yourself being great. See yourself making a mistake. See yourself fixing it, not pouting, keeping your head up. We do that for about 30 seconds and then we go out and we get ready for the game. And I'm a big sports psych. I think the mental is just as important as the physical. And so I really, truly try to engage the mental as much as I can to get them ready. So that's kind of how we prepare for game. When we come in for halftime, I'm a big, big on they talk to themselves. They write on the board what the issues are. They address them. And then I look on the board and see if what they're saying is matches what I say. And I agree with them.
Yep.
We're big on emergencies. We take a shot of an emergency at halftime for electrolytes, and then it's kind of a placebo thing, again, that mental thing. I tell them that vitamin C and the electrolytes, it's going to spur them to go out here and be even more energized. That's kind of how we handle halftime. And let my point guard address any issues on the court because she's the coach on the court. And that's kind of how we handle things, and I think it's worked for us.
Great, great stuff, Coach Q. It's a great place to leave this week's podcast. Just so much good stuff here, Coach. We did the have the kids write on the board, and like you said, it's amazing how many times they write 90% of the time the same things you and your coaches are talking about in the hallway. They've written up on the board, and I think it's a great exercise to have your players think about the game and think about what's going on here. So I love that type of stuff. That's terrific. Coach, if folks want to know more about you, want to know more about your programs, anything associated with you, how can they find you?
So on social media, and I know I'm bad with knowing my handles, I'm on Instagram, and it's Coach Q Leadership Coach. Let me make sure I'm saying that right.
Okay.
I'm like I said, I'm bad. You know, I'm old, I guess, with that. Q Leadership Coach. The letter Q Leadership Coach is under Instagram, and on Facebook, it's my name, Francois Bedell, on Facebook, and Coach Q on Twitter. I have on Facebook, it's Francois Q Bedell. And then, sorry, it's not Twitter anymore.
X. Yep.
On X, again, it's Francois Q Bedell. And then, you know, if you go at Coach QQ.
Gotcha.
On X. Yes, sir.
Awesome. Coach, great job today. A lot of great information. I got a page full of notes here written down. I hope you've enjoyed being on the pod, my friend.
Man, I loved it. I thank you for the opportunity, and it's always just fun to share the game and knowledge and, you know, also connect with other people from around the basketball community, and that's what we're here for, and anybody that needs anything, I'm always open to share.
Great. Awesome stuff here. Coach, if you could hold the line here a second, we just got to wrap up a couple of things. Again, Francois Bedell, the head women's basketball coach at Odessa Junior College in Texas. Great season this year. Made it down to the Elite Eight. Just done a great job wherever he's been. So check out his stuff. Check out his books, you know, so forth and so on. So, again, coaches, COSAC Chiropractic, we want to thank them for being our founding sponsor. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Download, rate, review, give us 5 stars for this and every other episode. Questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me at penandanapkin@gmail.com. Coaches, really appreciate your time. Coach Francois Bedell, great stuff here this morning. We're going to go crazy. We're going to go bug-eyed watching so much basketball this weekend, but it's going to be absolutely awesome. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.